Welcome to Figuring Out Fanfiction. By now, we are a couple weeks into January, and I must say, it's been the weirdest 2 weeks of my 22 years of existence. And that includes the time I encountered real-life fanfiction, specifically when I found out about One Direction fanfiction for the first time when I was about 14. And it's also weirder than the time I graduated college in the middle of a worldwide pandemic, etc., etc. I figured that I wanted today's guest to be someone who could provide me, and maybe you, a clear sense of clarity. You know, we've never really dealt with hard data on this podcast before, and I wanted to take that opportunity. I wanted someone to let numbers tell the story in perhaps a new perspective. The guest on the line today is not only someone who is passionate about fanfiction, but she has also made history. She is a champion aerobatic pilot. She was the first Latina to become a member of the United States aerobatic team and was the founder of one of the first schools that taught the subject matter. In 2009, President Obama honored her with the Presidential Early Career Award for Scientists and Engineers, which is the highest honor bestowed on scientists and engineers by the U.S. government. And she just published her memoir. We'll talk about all of those and, well, fan fiction. And you'll see how all of these come together soon, I promise. Dr. Cecilia Aragon, thank you so much for coming on to talk with me today.
Hello, Lianza, and thank you so much for having me. And please feel free to call me Cecilia.
Oh, thank you. I always get nervous calling people who are super accomplished by their first names. I don't even think I can call my professors from college still by
their I appreciate the respect that you show by calling me Dr. Aragon. So thank you. Thank you for that. But you can call me Cecilia.
Okay. Thank you, Cecilia. I want to start on with saying congratulations on publishing your memoir. Tell us a little bit about it, what inspired it, and what your story is.
All right. Well, thank you very much. So my memoir is called Flying Free, My Victory Over Fear to Become the First Latina Pilot on the U.S. Aerobatic Team. And it's the story of how a timid daughter of immigrants with terrible phobias overcame her fears to become a champion pilot flying loops, rolls, and spins.
Well, if you don't mind sharing with the audience, what was the most exciting part about writing in your memoir?
Well, there's so many exciting stories that I had over the many years that I flew aerobatics and taught people to fly and was a test pilot and flew on the United States aerobatic team. It's hard to pick the single most exciting part, but I'd have to say probably for me, the most thrilling part was when I actually won a spot on the United States team, despite having a relatively low performance airplane. I used to tell people, you know, the story about the little engine that could?
Yes, yes.
Well, I had the little airplane that couldn't. And I flew against, you know, much bigger airplanes. And, well, I made the team anyway. And I did that by using math and coming up with an algorithm to do it. And I'm very proud and excited about what I did.
That is super interesting. I'm someone who cannot, for the life of me, understand math. But to see that you were able to implement it and something you were passionate about is fascinating. And I can't wait to purchase it myself and read it.
Well, great. I hope you enjoy it. And it's, you know, it is people who don't know anything about math, people who don't know anything about flying have read it and said they really enjoyed the story part of it. So don't get intimidated by the aviation or the math parts. It's a fun story.
Cecilia, your career and achievements are, rooted in mathematics and logic and being an aerobatic pilot. And so I must admit, I was really surprised to see that you were also interested in fan fiction, as I've seen in your work. How did fan fiction come into the picture for you?
Well, for me, that goes back to my childhood. So when I was 10 years old, I was this really lonely, geeky girl. So I was growing up in a small town in the Midwest when I happened across Tolkien's fantasy trilogy, The Lord of the Rings. And I just fell in love with the book and the world. But I was distressed that there weren't enough female characters. So the main party of hobbits accompanying the protagonist didn't contain a single female. And that really made me feel kind of left out. I mean, it also made me think this isn't fair. Is it, it's not true that girls can't have adventures. So I decided to rewrite the story and regender a number of the characters and add some new scenes where my female protagonist was involved in making the stories, making the stories come out right. For example, the female hobbit devised a clever plan to foil the Balrog, which was a monster in the book. And the Balrog threw G the wizard Gandalf, who was one of my favorite characters, into a pit. And I didn't like that part. So I rewrote it not only to make it more fair, but also to make it more the way I wanted things to turn out. Because it actually wasn't until many years later that I realized that whole action where I created this world that was a world that was a reimagining of The Lord of the Rings where people like me could feel comfortable. I realized much later on that that was what was known as fan fiction. And it's really too bad that I didn't know about it as a 10-year-old or as a teenager, because it would have really made a difference in my life, because I felt very alone.
At the time you started writing fan fiction, fan fiction websites didn't really exist back then. So was writing fan fiction just a solo endeavor and you didn't really receive, any, I'm guessing you didn't receive any feedback as, people who write fan fiction now do.
No, I never showed that story to anybody because I didn't think it was a real story. And as it turned out that in those days there were people. I mean, it was before the internet became popular, and I could I if I had known there were people who liked Star Trek, which I also loved Star Trek. But people were getting together and exchanging mimeographed, what they called zines, where they were sharing hard copies of fan fiction they typed up. And I would have loved to know about that. I mean, that would have been awesome to get a package in the mail that has the latest, fan fictions about your favorite characters. But unfortunately, I just didn't know about it because, well, since the internet didn't exist in the way we know it now, there were so many things that teenagers just simply didn't have access to.
That's interesting. I never even knew that people would create hard copies on zines. That's something I'll have to look into.
Oh yeah, there's lots of great work that's been done about that. So let me see. There's Enterprising Women, which is a book that was written. Oh, let me make sure I get the name right. Of course I block on this. Oh yeah, Camille Bacon Smith. She wrote a book on Star Trek fandom, and then Henry Jenkins also wrote a book called Textual Poachers, which was also about fandom and fan fiction at the time. And I recommend both books. They're really excellent.
I'll definitely check those out. You also published a book, sorry. You also published a book where you studied fan fiction, which for those listening is called Writers in the Secret Garden. Could you talk about your motivations and what were your methodologies behind that?
All right, so I'm a professor at the University of Washington, and my specialty is human-centered data science. And what that is a combination of mathematical and algorithmic approaches to looking at very large amounts of, in this case, text, and also more humanistic studies, interviews, what we call ethnographic research, where you actually become a participant observer in a community and really try to understand what's going on rather than just conducting a survey, which can be rather shallow. And so I and my colleague, Katie Davis, who's a professor in the Information School at the University of Washington, we actually met by chance, and started this research project in 2013. And we just met at a lunch, and we happened it so happened that at that time, a book had just been published saying, claiming that teenagers were not very smart and that they weren't very literate. And Katie and I looked at each other because I had teenage children and she had a teenage sister. And we said to each other, that just seems wrong to us because both my kids were very articulate and well-spoken, and they also wrote well. They had large vocabularies. And she said the same was true about her sister. And then it came up that both of our relatives were involved in fan fiction. And so we thought, huh, maybe this is one of the ways, research is done. You start talking about something and you realize that what everybody accepts as the conventional wisdom may not be true, and you may have some evidence that it's counter to this conventional wisdom. And so Katie and I looked at each other and we thought, this sounds like a really great research topic. So we started a research group back then, and it just ended up growing and growing because when we put the first request out for students to join the group, we had the largest number of applicants for our research group than we'd ever had before. And so we knew, okay, we're on to something here.
When you published your book, what were the biggest takeaways that you found in studying this particular topic?
Well, the biggest topic was that fan fiction really deserves more credit. It's often dismissed. It's considered, when I say I'm studying it, people say, well, that's not really a serious or important topic. And I say, this is one site, which is just one of many, that has 10 million readers on it and 1.5 million writers. And the amount of writing that's been produced in the last 20 years rivals the size of the Google Books fiction corpus in past in that's been produced published in the in, since the printing press. And the median age of people writing these stories is 15 and a half. And that strikes me that this is something that we need to be paying attention to, and we should not be dismissing this. And as we got into it more deeply, we realized that yes, that young people are learning to write better by sharing comments and giving each other feedback and write as they write fan fiction. And this is a phenomenon we call distributed mentoring. And additionally, it's a home for groups of people who have often been marginalized. If you're interested in any, in paying attention to what marginalized people are doing, what young people are doing today, fan fiction is something that's really important to pay attention to. And it distresses me that it still has a negative reputation, that it's considered just derivative, you know, or it's all porn. And that really bothers me because, you know, I mean, you can say that, I mean, Shakespeare used other characters, you know, he used characters from Greek myths, all right? He repurposed them. He wrote stories that were set in the world. And we don't say, oh, he wrote derivative fan fiction. We say, wow, he's a great writer. And it's the same thing, you know, with learning to write today. Just because you take another world and use other characters does not necessarily mean what you're writing is derivative. It may be. And I'm not saying that all the writing on these fan fiction sites is brilliant. Some of it is really pretty bad. But the fact is that it's how young people are learning to write. And we were able to show measurable increases in use of vocabulary as people had more feedback from others on the site. And this is something that I think it was a really important thing that we were able to do, because now we have scientific proof that, you know, fan fiction actually can help build youth literacy. And that's something that is always being talked about today, because let me see if I can find the figure. Oh yeah, so there was the most recent report from the National Assessment of Educational Progress said that 73% of US students in grades 8 and 12 lack proficiency in writing. So this is a major problem. And now we have something that young people enjoy and that there's a measurable improvement in their writing skills by participating. I think this is something that we can all learn more about.
Right. In your book, you focus a lot on the impact of fan fiction on young teenagers, especially through what you said, distributed mentorship. Do you think that there's a possibility that there's a similar role or something akin to that in terms of this effect on older generations who write fan fiction?
I think it's certainly possible. We did not study that. We have not. So we studied mostly fanfiction.net, which is the largest fanfiction repository in existence so far, but it's not the fastest growing. Archive of our own is growing faster, and many more experienced fanfiction writers have migrated away from fanfiction.net and into Archive of our own. So our next step, we are talking about doing more work in the future, and one of them is studying older writers on Archive of our own. But it's, you know, as one of the issues with these research projects is they do take a lot of time to really do them right.
Right.
So
continue.
I was just saying, so because I'm a scientist, I can't tell you, oh yes, I'm sure it would distributed mentoring would benefit anybody, but my personal belief is that it does, but I don't have the scientific proof yet.
Right. Based on my observations, there are people who are much older. I even used to interact with a fan fiction writer who had just given birth to a child. And she says, while it probably doesn't help her in the way it does to younger people, it's still helpful to see that certain people like how she wrote certain things. And I think that in as much as fan fiction seems to be a much younger activity in terms of its audience, it's helpful to see that it can benefit really anyone.
Well, I think so as well. And I mean, here's my feeling. I think that we studied one site that had this young median age of 15 and a half, but that does not mean that most fan fiction writers are young. As I said, there are other places where there is a lot of fan fiction, like Archive of Our Own or Wattpad. And many of the people writing there are older, and in many cases, much older, in their 60s or 70s. There are a lot of particularly older women writing fan fiction on all of those sites as well. So I would be really hesitant about saying fan fiction writers are mostly young. I don't think that's true. this one site that we studied because we were interested in youth literacy. You know, so don't put the cart before the horse, so to speak. It's important to remember we went to this site where there were young authors because that's what we were studying. We were not trying to talk about the universe of fan fiction where where the age range is much, much higher. And on AO3, the median age is well into adulthood.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, you know, the existence of distributed mentorship could implement, I'm going to repeat that bit. Do you think that distributed mentorship can implement long-term change on youth literacy?
Absolutely. I really think it can make a huge difference. If you can imagine the effect of this distributed mentoring, you know, which is people, young people mostly, getting mentoring from a large range of individuals, mostly in small pieces. Okay, so it turns the conventional idea of mentoring on its head. So instead of having one older or more experienced person mentoring one younger, less experienced person, it's now a community effort. And somebody might receive mentoring on their story, maybe from somebody much younger who happens to be a real expert in fandom knowledge. And then somebody else might have more grammar knowledge. And so everybody contributes these little pieces in different areas where they have expertise. And the wonderful thing about it is that means that that even young people, very young people, can be mentors as well. And I think as is well known in the field of teaching and education, mentoring someone else is actually a great way to learn. So that means these young people who, you know, if you have a 13-year-old mentoring a 16-year-old, that 13-year-old is learning just as much from that process. And maybe their writing is also going to improve. And so I believe very strongly that if we expand this idea of mentorship to include distributed mentoring so that people can mentor in small pieces and mentor as part of a community, I think that can lead to terrific improvements in youth literacy.
Okay. Do you think that there needs to be some kind of way that encourages teenagers maybe to write fan fiction? Do you think that's something people should consider?
We don't need to encourage them to write it. They're already writing it. So, I mean, it's one of the strengths of fan fiction that it is completely interest driven. I think we all know people like my kids and me as well, who wrote tremendous amounts, you know, on their own. But then as soon as it was required for a class would, you know, suddenly get writer's block and wouldn't be able to write much. And the fluidity of their writing slowed way down. So I really hope that we never have assignments in class where people are required to write fan fiction. I would rather see ways to encourage people to, well, I'd like to start just by saying, let's not discourage young people from writing fan fiction. Let's encourage young people to write whatever they want, read and write whatever they want.
Mm-hmm. What's your take? I'm curious now. What's your take on teenagers, you know, potentially being exposed to more dangerous themes on fan fiction because they're reading it? Do you think that might also have a negative impact on their growth?
Well, okay, so that's a complex question. And I do think parents need to be aware of what their kids are exposed to. However, okay. I have to say that this happened before fan fiction as well. I remember when I was fairly young, I happened across a book that I don't know how I got it. I think it was in a bunch of secondhand books that my parents got and just let me read without checking it. And it was kind of shocking to me with how explicit it was. And I was maybe 11 or 12. And I remember reading this and kind of being shocked and a little upset. But, I just sort of moved on with my life. I mean, knowing that that was something that existed in the world. And I see it with my kids today. It's one thing to expose people to videos. I think there's a difference when it's in words. Because my kids have certainly, I mean, they grew up with the internet the way it was. And I raised them in a way that, so I'm a believer in the there are two ways to raise a young child if you live in a house with stairs. You can either put up a gate and never allow them to go on the stairs, or as soon as they get to the point where they're crawling, you can take them to the stairs and teach them how to go up and down the stairs and teach them about the dangers as well as what they can do. And I took that same approach with my kids on the internet, is I had their computer set up so that I could see it. And I also encouraged them if there was anything that they didn't understand, that they should come to me and ask. And sure enough, my son at one point was like 6 years old, and he came to me and he was playing this online game, and he was very confused about something that was going on. And I saw when I went and looked at the chat, I saw that there was somebody who was saying inappropriate things, probably an adult. And so what I did is I explained that to my son. I didn't get mad at him. I didn't get upset. I just said, oh yeah, there's always going to be, people who are not telling the truth about who they are. And here is how you block them. And then I just showed how to do that. And I said, and let me know if there's any more problems. I'm happy to help you with it. And I was totally neutral about it, even though inside I was like, ah. And you know what? Both my kids, and they're both adults now, and they have both grown up with, I think, a very mature attitude. They know there's porn on the internet. And they've told me, if you had gotten upset and hidden it, guess what we would have done? We would have tried to find it, and then we would have looked for it without you being around. And we would have thought of it in this sort of guilty, secretive way. And they might have still ended up being the kids they are, but I think that by not judging them about it, I was able to be, to give them guidance and to let them know, what is right and what is wrong. And I think that's something that's really important. Of course, what can I say? Every parent has to take their own path. And I do think we need, it's something that parents need to guide their kids on. And certainly there is porn in fan fiction, like there is everywhere in the rest of the internet. So that's something that you need to speak. I think parents would need to speak with their kids about. But if they say, oh, we're going to read this together, then that gives, the parents an option to say, this is not very well written, and this isn't really what it's like, and I think that is a healthier way to raise young people in the world of today where they will get access. You cannot completely keep them off the internet. You absolutely cannot. I know because I tried sometimes to punish my kids by, disabling the router. And I should say I got my PhD in computer science, and my husband is also an electrical engineer. We're both very savvy. But even though we disabled the router, our kids figured out a way around it. So, that didn't work.
You mentioned that there needs to be, there needs to be a way to sort of wash away the negative connotations of fan fiction. What do you think are some steps that might be helpful towards that process?
Well, you mean for parents, are you saying, or for adults?
Yeah, for parents and
I mean, for
adults, yeah, for
adults, it's pretty
adults.
simple. I mean, I learned pretty quickly. I read fan fiction, I still do, but I learned pretty quickly which tags on AO3 I want to avoid, which types of, you can usually tell in the first couple paragraphs, and there's warnings. So it's like, okay, I don't like that kind of fan fiction. And you can teach your kids about that too. It's up to you. Read what you like. And people have different, they all have different tastes. And it's really up, it's up to, I mean, I can't judge what other parents will do. It's up to every parent to decide how strict they're going to be with their kids and how much they're going to allow them to be exposed to. And I think the main thing is to say, you know what, you don't have to read that if you don't want to.
Cecilia, it was an absolute honor to have you on this podcast. I'm so grateful you were able to find time and have a conversation that, taught me so many different things, like the fact people have zines. So I'll definitely be checking that out. If people want to contact you or learn more about you, where would you direct them?
Well, the best place would be my website, ceciliaaragonauthor.com. And there's a contact point on there if they're interested. Or they can follow me on Twitter at Cecilia R. Aragon. And Cecilia is spelled with two I's, CECILIA. And then Aragon is spelled ARAGON. And
Okay.
oh, before you
Thank
go,
you.
Leonza, I want to say thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you. I truly enjoyed having this conversation with you, and well, I look forward to learning more about being about aerobatics once I get your number.
Fantastic. Feel free to contact me.
All right. Thank you. You have a good one and
Thank
stay
you
safe.
too, Leonza.
From the very beginning, when I first read about her, Dr. Aragon amazed me with her credentials and what she had to say about being a pilot and a scientist. And then I learned about her work on studying the impact of fan fiction by looking at millions of words, and it also taught me about teen writers, what fan fiction means to them, and how it could even increase literacy rates. It reaffirmed plenty of what's been discussed on here before. Gufran and Nadia, for instance, talked about their experiences of fan fiction becoming a key factor to their adolescent lives, and parts of my own story on here too reaffirmed this. So fan fiction is no longer just a pastime. It's a learning avenue. Next week, Serene Park joins me in discussing Tumblr as a platform for fan-made art and media, and its contributions to the world of fan fiction. Any questions or comments or maybe a snarky remark, if you have any, can be written to figuringoutfanfiction@gmail.com. Thanks for joining me. See you next week.